everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. I'm going to read an article about the war in Ukraine, followed by some questions and answers published some time ago that are very relevant to the current situation. And if there's time at the end, there's a few quotes I'd like to read from a compilation titled The Brotherhood of Nations. To begin, here's the article about Ukraine. It's titled, A Negotiated Peace is the Only Way to End Russia's War on Ukraine. And it's by Jeffrey D. Sachs. Jeffrey is a professor of sustainable development and professor of health policy and management at Columbia University, as well as holding a couple of other significant positions. His books include The End of Poverty, Commonwealth, The Age of Sustainable Development, and most recently, Building the New American Economy. And this article was published on the website CNN. There is only one answer to the war in Ukraine, a peace deal. The two-pronged US strategy to help Ukraine overcome the Russian invasion by imposing tough sanctions and by supplying Ukraine's military with sophisticated armaments is likely to fall short. What is needed is a peace deal, which may be within reach. Yet to reach a deal, the United States will have to compromise on NATO, something Washington has so far rejected. Putin started the war in Ukraine and has said negotiations have reached an impasse without slamming the door on them. But before the war started, Putin presented the West with a list of demands, including, most notably, a halt to NATO enlargement. The US, pointedly, was not willing to engage on that point. Now would be a good time to revisit that policy. Putin also would have to show a willingness to make concessions for negotiations to succeed. America's arms and sanctions approach may sound convincing in the echo chamber of US public opinion, but it doesn't really work on the global stage. It enjoys little support outside of the United States and Europe, and eventually may face a political backlash inside the US and Europe as well. To anyone familiar with the Russian war effort and the horror it has unleashed on civilians, it may seem obvious that Russia would be relegated to pariah status globally. But that's not the case. Developing countries especially have declined to join in the West's campaign of isolation, as seen most recently in a US-led vote to remove Russia from the UN Human Rights Council. It's true that 93 countries supported the move, but 100 other countries did not. Of that, 24 opposed, 58 abstained, and 18 did not vote. Even more striking, those 100 countries are home to 76% of the world's population. Countries may well have had non-ideological reasons for opposing the US initiative, including trade ties with Russia. But the fact remains that much of the world has rejected isolating Moscow, especially to the degree Washington would like. Sanctions are a big part of the US strategy. They're not likely to defeat Russia, but they are likely to impose high costs around the world. At best, they can push Russia towards a peace agreement, and therefore should be deployed in conjunction with an intensive push for a negotiated peace. There are countless problems with economic sanctions. The first is that even as sanctions cause economic distress in Russia, they are unlikely to change Russian politics or policies in any decisive way. Think of the harsh sanctions the US has imposed on Venezuela, Iran, and North Korea. Yes, they've weakened these economies, but they've not changed the politics or policies of these countries in the ways that the US government has sought. The second problem is that sanctions are easy to evade, at least in part, and more evasions are likely to emerge over time. The US sanctions apply most effectively to dollar-based transactions involving the US banking system. Countries seeking to evade the sanctions find ways to make transactions through non-bank or non-dollar means. We can expect a rising number of transactions with Russia in rubles, rupees, renminbi, and other non-dollar currencies. The third and related problem is that most of the world does not believe in the sanctions and also does not take sides in the Russia-Ukraine war. Add up all the countries and regions imposing sanctions on Russia, the US, UK, European Union, Japan, Singapore, Australia, New Zealand, and a handful of others, and their combined population comes to just 14% of the world population. The fourth problem is the boomerang effect. Sanctions on Russia hurt not just Russia, but the entire world economy, stoking supply chain disruptions, inflation, and food shortages. This is why many European countries are likely to continue to import gas and oil from Russia, and why Hungary and perhaps some other European countries will agree to pay Russia in rubles. The boomerang effect will also likely hurt Democrats in this November's midterm elections as inflation eats away at the real earnings of voters. The fifth problem is the inelastic, price-insensitive demand for Russia's energy and grain exports. As the quantity of Russian exports is reduced, the world prices of these commodities increase. Russia can end up with lower export volumes, but nearly the same or even higher export earnings. The sixth problem is geopolitical. Other countries, and most importantly China, see the Russia-Ukraine war, at least in part, as a war in which Russia is resisting NATO enlargement to Ukraine. That's why China repeatedly argues that Russia's legitimate security interests are at stake in the war. The US likes to say that NATO is a purely defensive alliance, but Russia, China, and others think otherwise. They look askance at the NATO bombing of Serbia in 1999, NATO forces in Afghanistan for 20 years after 9/11, and the NATO bombing of Libya in 2011, which toppled Muammar Gaddafi. Russian leaders have been objecting to NATO's eastward enlargement since it began in the mid-1990s, with the Czech Republic, Hungary, and Poland. It is notable that when Putin called on NATO to stop its enlargement into Ukraine, Biden pointedly refused to negotiate with Russia over the issue. In short, many countries, certainly including China, will not back global pressures on Russia that could lead to NATO expansion. The rest of the world wants peace, not a victory by the United States or NATO in a proxy war with Russia. The US would love to see Putin defeated militarily, and NATO armaments have dealt a huge and heavy blow to Russian forces. But it's also true that Ukraine is being destroyed in the process. Russia is unlikely to declare defeat and retreat. Russia is much more likely to escalate, even potentially by using nuclear weapons. Thus, NATO arms can inflict huge costs on Russia, but cannot save Ukraine. All of this is to say that the US strategy in Ukraine can bleed Russia, but can't save Ukraine. Only a peace deal can do that. In fact, the current approach will undermine economic and political stability throughout the world and could divide the world into pro-NATO and anti-NATO camps to the deep, long-term detriment of the United States. American diplomacy is therefore punishing Russia, but without much chance of real success for Ukraine or for US interests. Real success is that Russian troops return home and Ukraine's safety and security are achieved. Those outcomes can be achieved at the negotiating table. The key step is for the US, NATO allies, and Ukraine to make clear that NATO will not enlarge into Ukraine as long as Russia stops the war and leaves Ukraine. The countries aligned with Putin and those choosing either side would then say to Putin that since he has stopped NATO's enlargement, it's now time for Russia to leave the battlefield and go home. Of course, negotiations might fail if Russia's demands remain unacceptable, but we should at least try, and indeed try very hard, to see whether peace can be achieved through Ukraine's neutrality backed by international guarantees. All of Biden's tough talk about Putin leaving power, genocide, and war crimes will not save Ukraine. The best chance to save Ukraine is through negotiations that bring the world on side. By prioritizing peace instead of NATO enlargement, the US would rally the support of much more of the world and thereby help to bring peace to Ukraine and security and stability for the entire world. And as mentioned before, that article was originally published on the CNN website. Anyway, on to the questions and answers. These, again, are on the theme of Ukraine, and they were answered, well, this first one was answered back in 2014 by Benjamin Krem. The question is, with regard to Ukraine, is that country not part of the Russian sphere of influence? And the answer is, yes, it is. Next one, should the European Union and US therefore refrain from interfering in their internal affairs? And the answer was yes. However, Ukraine is no longer part of what was the Soviet Union, and while remaining within the Russian sphere of influence, its sovereignty must be respected. Next question, this is from the 2004, one of the 2004 Share International magazines. And it goes, how should Russia deal with its erstwhile Soviet republics? Is Chechen independence and that of other countries in a similar relationship to Moscow part of the divine plan? Benjamin Krem's answer, it is part of the divine plan that all peoples should be free agents of their own evolution and destiny. Russia should have long ago acceded to Chechnya's demands for some form of autonomy. And this question was a series of three questions, is from the May 2005 issue of the magazine. People power is a trend that the media is beginning to notice increasingly. Kazakhstan is the latest instance. Was it helped by agents provocateurs? The answer, no. Second question, was the Ukraine Orange Revolution fueled by agents provocateurs? And the answer is yes on both sides. And the third question, will the Kazakhstan example trigger a domino effect across the region, just as each previous example of people power seems to inspire the next uprising? And the answer is yes, most likely. The following question is from the December 2000 issue of the magazine. Will one of Maitreya's tasks be to open our hearts to others' sufferings? Certainly, one of Maitreya's hopes is to open our hearts to others' suffering. That is what he does every time he releases its energies into the world. It has been at the centre of everything he has said and everything I have said and all the talks and writings I have done. That is exactly what he hopes to do, to open our hearts to the world's suffering. That way you change the world. He said, take your brother's need as the measure for your action and solve the problems of the world. There is no other course. And that quote is from Maitreya's message number 52. One more question. This is from November 1986 issue of Share International magazine. In 1982, near the original time for the Day of Declaration, the Falklands War broke out. Now that Maitreya's emergence is again imminent, the business with Libya, America, and terrorism intensifies. Is there any connection? And Mr. Krem's answer, yes. Those with most to lose by Maitreya's emergence, that is, the forces of materiality, the forces of evil, do everything in their power to prevent it. War, terrorism, tension, fear, chaos are their main weapons. Many world leaders play right into their hands, not because they are evil, but because they are often ignorant, dogmatic, and chauvinistic, lacking in a world view. So that's all on the theme of Ukraine, the war there with Russia. Now for some quotes from a compilation published in the April issue titled The Brotherhood of Nations. The first is from Benjamin Krem's book Maitreya's Mission, Volume 2. The world can no longer afford the vast discrepancies between the living standards of the rich and those of the poor nations. That imbalance is at the heart of our political and economic problems today. Basically, it is a spiritual problem, a choice between materialism and separation on the one hand, and spiritual sharing, justice, and brotherhood on the other. Our choice will decide the fate of humanity. This next quote is from Benjamin Krem's master from an article titled The Brotherhood of Man. Men must come to realize that the people of all the nations are one and equal, dependent each upon the other. No one nation owns nor can rule the world. No one nation can stand alone against the rest. The days of empire and dominion are past. Man is on the threshold of a new understanding of his role on planet Earth. This involves a change in his relationship to his fellow travellers on the path to wisdom and true stewardship of the planet's bounty. Now, one from Maitreya is actually given through Maitreya's associate, and it's from the book Maitreya's Teachings, The Laws of Life. Nations should not merge into one and thereby lose their identity. And as Maitreya says, even if you merge with me, your individual identity remains. The individual identity of a nation must likewise be enshrined. At the same time, nations can and will experience brotherhood, common goals and common aspirations. But it is undivine for a giant to devour your identity, both in the case of individuals and of nations. This next one is from Benjamin Krem from his book The Art of Cooperation. The world is divided into two groups, those who are holding on to the old greedy and selfish nationalistic systems and who thus represent the reactionary forces of the world, and those who are opening to the new incoming energies of Aquarius and who are looking for a way of brotherhood and cooperation, a realization of the interdependence that results from the fact that we are one humanity. And on that note, we will finish. Thank you for listening in and wishing you all a lovely week.